Hi, everybody. Nope. Let's see if this works. Okay, the mouse is attached, but it's not going up or down. Ah, there we go. So I'll move out of the way. So the wireless is down, which is good. That means y'all have to listen to me. Hi, my name is Patrick Gilmore. Can this go back? Hey, it goes back. I work for a company called Akamai Technologies. I'm going to be speaking about pairing with content distribution networks. So a very long time ago, before most of you were actually born, I took a class on how to give PowerPoint slides, actually before PowerPoint existed. And they told me to always have an agenda slide. There's my agenda slide. Moving on. Moving on. Disclaimer, I work for Akamai, which is a content distribution network. I've tried to make this as agnostic as possible. The idea here is that you're supposed to know about how to peer with content distribution networks, not how to peer with Akamai. Because everybody here peers with Akamai, right? If you don't, meet me outside later, I'll beat you up. So I'm going to try and make this agnostic. If you see something that's either specific to Akamai or if you see something that doesn't apply, you know, raise your hand or tell me later and I'll see what I can do about it. There we go. So what is a content distribution network? Wow, that mouse is in the way. There we go. A content distribution network is, and I'm not making this up, there's an RFC for it because there's an RFC for everything. Content delivery network or content distribution network, a type of content network, wow, we're real smart, aren't we, in which the content network elements are arranged for a more effective delivery of content to clients. Can anybody say tautology? So what is that? Thank you. Apparently this is a very slow laptop. What does that mean in English? Since we're in England, I guess it's good to do English. A CDN is an overlay network. For instance, Akamai does not have a backbone. We use something called the internet as our backbone. An overlay network. Does everybody know what an overlay network is? I want to make sure I'm not saying stuff that'll bore you guys. Okay, so we'll just skip over what an overlay network is. So CDNs are usually made up of islands, geographically distinct nodes that are not interconnected in any way. There are some examples that are not true of this, but most CDNs work this way. So the servers are operated by type. Many times there's different kinds. Windows Media Streaming servers are different than HTTP servers. I know this will come as a shock, but Windows Media Streaming servers don't work on any operating system other than Microsoft Windows. So this makes it very hard to have a homogeneous network. So content distribution networks have a bunch of little islands, and each island has a bunch of different services inside of them, usually. Everybody understand that? Am I boring anyone yet? Yeah. Nigel's falling asleep, but we'll go on. By the way, was anybody here in the Britannia last night? Raise your hand. Yeah, so the Britannia's fire alarm went off at 6 o'clock this morning, and I haven't been asleep since then. And since I didn't get to sleep until about 5:30, that means I'm going to fall asleep in the middle of my own presentation. So that was the wrong way. So you click the button, and you wait a second. So that was pretty interesting. I clicked the same button twice, and it went different directions. Tell you what. Push the button again. Okay, there we go. When content is requested from a CDN, the user is directed to the optimal server. Sorry, I keep looking down to see what I actually wrote. This is usually done through DNS. So if you type www.akamai.com in London and you type it in Tokyo, you get two different answers. And we'll actually have an example of that a little later. It can be done through anycasting. That's another way of doing it, but the same idea applies. If you're in London, you get a different web server than you do if you're in Tokyo. Pretty simple concept, I think. Users who use DNS queries for their mapping means figuring out which web server goes to which end user, return different IP addresses. So this is important because a lot of people think, you know, if you type host space hostname, everyone gets the same IP address back. That is not true. And it's not true for a large fraction of the internet. Think about how many websites are on CDNs these days. Most of them do not return the same IP address for two people doing the same exact host name. So obviously, a CDN's magic sauce is the mapping. The better the mapping, the better the CDN. If you're in London and you get the web server in Tokyo, it's not a very good CDN, is it? Try the other button. Aha. So here's an example. Can everybody read that? It's a little light, I guess. I just did a host on semantic.com from a host in New York and a host in Boston. They're just two of my personal machines so that I wouldn't involve any corporate resources. And you can see real simply, it just returns different IP addresses. So what do you use to decide how to map something? Pretty simple, you use latency, throughput, and packet loss. The same thing any good network engineer would use. This is sometimes called good put as opposed to throughput. It turns out that in many, 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 many cases on the internet these days, this devolves to latency because packet loss is usually 0% for, you know, high 80s or 90s percent of paths by bits. I mean, if you just take paths, then there's a lot of them that are broken. But for the big bit paths, the ones that have, you know, tens of gigabits on them, packet loss tends to be 0%, and throughput's so big that, you know, the host at the end can't overwhelm it, so it doesn't matter. So this devolves into a latency calculation. Geography still counts. There's this thing called the speed of light. We keep trying to get around it, and it keeps coming back and pulling us in. Look at that. So why would a CDN pair with ISPs? First and foremost reason is improved performance. People buy CDNs not to save money because we're all more expensive than transit, unless you're level three. But in general, you're looking for performance and scalability. So CDNs want to pair with you because it'll improve their performance. Instead of going through an extra AS, they can go directly to you. It provides better throughput. Believe it or not, we actually have some, I get chided about this a lot. Akamai actually has some data showing that if we take an AS out of the middle, even if the latency doesn't change a whole lot and there was no packet loss to begin with, we still, for some reason, get actually more throughput. The actual megabits per second that the host can pull down from the web server is slightly higher. Not sure why, but it works out that way. There might be, you know, some really tiny fraction of packet loss that's not easy to measure because TCP is extremely sensitive to packet loss, as I'm sure you're all noticing. I personally think it's due to the TCP window opening faster, but we actually go out of our way personally inside of Akamai to open the TCP window as fast as possible. So I'm not sure that's really the reason. Anyway, pair with us because it'll give better performance and throughput. Redundancy. This is huge. There's a lot of vectors out there on the internet, right? If I only have one path to you and something goes wrong, that's bad. If I have lots of paths to you, that's better. So having things like transit and lots of pairing sessions, that's a good thing. Burstability. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but traffic keeps going up. Who here has not seen traffic increase in the past 3 seconds? Okay, except on this wireless. Is anybody on the wireless yet? Good, then you're still listening to me. So burstability is a huge problem for most CDNs. It's a lot of reasons why some people actually come to CDNs. Customers sometimes don't care about performance that much. I mean, you guys all have Microsoft operating systems on your either on your personal laptops or your customers do, and they download a lot of patches in the background. These patches nobody's watching a bar go across the screen. Whether they take 1 minute or 100 minutes to download, nobody knows and cares. But when Microsoft has a security thing, which never ever happens, but when Microsoft has a security patch that must get out right away, they have hundreds of gigabits that they need to deliver, and so you need to have a huge burstability. You guys all run networks. Whatever your network level is today, let's say whether it's, you know, 100 megs, 1 gig, 10 gigs, or 100 gigs, how many of you have ever seen your network grow by 50 or 100% in 10 minutes? Okay. Okay, without being DOSed. Okay, now of you guys, how many of you are doing triple-digit gigabits? I have, and this is important for this reason. I can't do that with simply just having a bunch of transit connections, because there's no transit network in the world that can do it. So you have to peer with CDNs, because we're not the only ones. You know, there are other big CDNs out there, right? So you really should peer with CDNs, because you really will get this gigantic burst. Moving on. I love that delayed reaction. It's like, you know, it's like the laptop's as tired as I am. So why else do we do it? Shockingly, we like to reduce our costs. Duh. Network intelligence. What's the CDN's entire reason for being? Mapping the internet. Akamai maps the internet every 12 hours. We map the entire internet every 12 hours. I'm not making it up. So every piece of information we can gain, including things like a BGP session over an IX, is useful to us. Backup for on-net servers. This one is actually Akamai specific. Turns out there aren't too many CDNs that actually put servers in everybody's network, but we do. So when we put servers in your network, you know, they serve your end users. If those servers go down, it's nice to have a second vector over the IX to serve you, as opposed to just using your transit and our transit. So going on to why ISPs peer with CDNs. Shockingly, the exact same thing, performance. You and I are in the same business. We're trying to get a whole bunch of bits to a whole bunch of eyeballs as quickly, cheaply, and reliably as possible. At least that's my business. I'm assuming it's all of your businesses too. So should pair with CDNs because they're in the same business you are. We really are just two sides of the same coin. Cost reduction again, shockingly, this saves you money. Backbone savings, this is, again, an interesting one that's somewhat Akamai specific. How many of you have like a link into the Docklands, right? And your network is nowhere near the Docklands, right? And so you have to buy a fiber into the Docklands because who knows how Telehouse and Telecity did this, but they decided that every piece of fiber in, you know, this half of the planet needs to go through the Docklands. Well, imagine instead of like peering there and pulling back, you know, 1 or 10 gigs to the core of your network, whether it's Manchester, Scotland, or even, you know, 5 miles from the Docklands, if you just put a bunch of servers over there, that would be good. Save you some backhaul. Love that. Marketing. So I haven't seen this a whole lot lately, but some ISPs have actually claimed like how many peers they have and whether they pair with certain people in their marketing. And the last and most important reason why you should pair with CDNs is because you're all very, very nice, aren't you? Okay, stop scowling. So here is a typical, again, this is Akamai specific because I know what an Akamai IX node looks like. But in general, this is what a lot of the IX nodes look like for Panther Express, Mirror Image, CacheFly, people like that. The network-based CDNs, there's a few of them that have their own backbone. Level 3, Limelight, it's got to be another one. I don't know. There's another network-based CDN. They obviously have their own backbones. They don't look exactly like this. But most of the CDNs out there that you see, you know, Bitgravity and et cetera, all look like this. It's very, very simple. There's an IX. There's a router. There's content. Okay, something's wrong. There was more than one word down there. These are content distribution network servers, and this is an origin server. So you pair with us. We get a request for the content. Got to feed the cache somehow. So we go out over transit, go to the origin server, put it into the hard drive of the servers, and then we serve it over the IX 1,000 times. Very, very, very simple. Anybody got any questions on this one? No? Hey, I did that really fast because Keith actually asked if I could do two presentations here, so I'm going to see if I can get to the other one really quickly. So a couple of caveats about what content distribution networks do when they peer. They tend not to announce a lot of blocks. So who here peers with Akamai, in all seriousness, who here has looked at the Akamai peering session that you guys have? Do you know how many prefixes we announced to you? Like, between 1 and 5, usually. If you look on our, you know, akamai.com/pairing, it says set max prefix to 10. I don't think I actually have a single router that's announcing more than 5. But, you know, I like to be careful, so I say 10. Doesn't mean we don't have a lot of traffic. I mean, if you actually, you know, look at the traffic you're getting over that session, it's probably a non-trivial amount. We usually measure in English-speaking countries somewhere between 15 and 20% of all HTTP traffic comes from an Akamai server somewhere. So that's a serious amount of traffic. And it usually comes out of one prefix. This is because each Akamai node and each CDN node on non-network CDNs is an island. How many servers do you guys think it takes to fill a 10 gig port? I mean, you know, not that many, right? So since each server typically has one or two IP addresses, because you can, you know, use HTTP 1.1 and get lots of host names onto a single IP, and that way Aaron and Ripe and APNIC don't get mad at you, we only need like a /24 to fill a 10 gig peering port. So don't get scared, don't get upset, don't be like, you're only sending me one prefix, I don't peer with people that small. Well, guess what? We're not actually that small. Limelight, Akamai, the rest of us, and again, not Akamai specific, CDNs in general tend to be big. So, any questions before we move to the next presentation? You guys have been very quiet. I know I haven't been perfect here.
Vusi Nabela here from Siemens Internet Services, and we look after the BBC infrastructure. What I'm interested in is the criteria that you use for on-net content storage. So, and the nature of the relationships between you and the ISPs that you host servers in.
Okay, that's a good That's a good question, because that doesn't make it sound like I was trying to get you guys to ask that question. So without sounding too markety, Akamai pretty much puts servers into any ISP that can pull enough bandwidth off of the servers to pay for the servers. So that's generally in the neighborhood of, it's a little north of 10 megabits averaged over 30 days. Not very much, actually. It's actually pretty small. That's a 30-day average, so you know, 20, 25 megabits, 95th percentile, because you know we amortize the servers over 3 years. If you have an ISP that doesn't have Akamai servers and you think that you're pulling more than 25 megabits at a 95th percentile-ish, send me an email. I'm Patrick at Akamai. I have cards and stuff. And I'll get somebody to talk to you, and we'll ship you servers for free. But that's just Akamai. Again, trying to be agnostic. I don't know of other CDNs that do that, but I assume there could be some. Also, since you do BBC stuff, you should know, I mentioned at one of the beginning slides at the last presentation that we have different formats. So BBC, everybody's heard of something called iPlayer probably, right? Who here hasn't heard of iPlayer? Who here has been complaining that iPlayer is going to make your business go out of business or something silly like that? Is anybody listening? Hello.
That's the panel later on.
Okay. So... Oh, the network's back. No wonder nobody's listening. Okay. So iPlayer works off something called Flash. The servers we usually put inside of ISPs are HTTP only. They run Linux and they run, you know, an Akamai web server. It's actually nothing you've ever seen. It's all homegrown stuff. Since the iPlayer stuff comes off Flash, it requires a much larger ISP to qualify for a Flash deployment as well as an HTTP deployment. Now, very large networks still do. The problem with this is that different content has different cacheability. And if all we're doing is putting a bunch of servers in and 90% of the hits that your users do are not are single hits for that piece of content, it's not useful to us or you to host those servers inside the network. This is another reason why you should peer with CDNs. If you have a bunch of HTTP servers in your network, that's good. But Flash and, for instance, WMS, which again, you know, like I said, runs off Windows hardware and so is a different set of servers, that may still be coming across the exchange point as opposed to inside your network. So it's always good to peer with a CDN, not just Akamai. Did that answer all your questions?
Yeah, I'm also interested in the nature of any commercial relationship that you have. Is it very much a, this is... in both our interests, and so therefore it's worth having servers on net, but I'm assuming that these servers also serve traffic off net. So for instance, servers within BT's network can serve a Virgin customer, for instance.
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and answer the question, even though it's very Akamai specific. I hope nobody minds. The commercial relationship is usually $0. We don't pay you, you don't pay us. It's 100% barter. And no, it is specific to you. We like to think of it as a modified peering agreement. You give us rack space, we stick some servers in there. Those servers cache content for your end users only. And you define what the end users are. So usually what we do is we have a route server, we have a bunch of route server boxes, and you send us a BGP session, and we take the prefixes on the BGP session. We don't announce anything back, we're just collecting these. And that BGP session has a bunch of prefixes in it, and that builds an allow list. Everything in that, everything in all of those prefixes is allowed to be served off of your servers on your network. Everything that's not in that feed is not allowed to be served. So a BT, a box inside of BT will not serve a virgin end user unless BT, you know, accidentally sends us a virgin route. So it's just like peering. If you're over an IX, you know, we're only going to send traffic to you over the IX for the routes you announce. If you announce us the wrong route, then theoretically we could serve something off your network, but nobody ever does that unless they're, you know, playing weird games. So yeah, it's one-to-one, serves your end users only, no money changes hands. We get paid by the content providers, so Microsoft, Symantec, Apple, people like that pay us, your end users pay you, and we don't pay each other. Everybody happy with that answer? Okay, so I only got 10 minutes left. This is more than 10 minutes worth of slides, so I'm gonna skip over it. Some of it's marketing anyway, which we don't like. Where's my mouse? There's my mouse. So this is a slide about how this stuff works. Akamai introduction, there's an agenda, whatever. Yeah, it's very pretty. So who is Akamai? We were a public company, we were founded in blah, 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 moving on. So what do? We have a product portfolio, what a shock. We have more product portfolio. If anybody wants these slides, they're on the website. You don't care about that. This is an old slide, but it'll give you an idea. We have this cool little globe thing, and if you come to Akamai in Cambridge, Massachusetts, I'll show it to you. It's very cool. Shows where the servers are, how much you know, the colors are, how much the CPU is being used. So green is better than yellow. You know, megabits per second and hits per second and stuff like that. And the globe spins, and you can see all these spikes sticking out of it. It's a very cool demo. Okay, enough of that. Akamai overview. So we're the world's largest content distribution network, on-demand commuting platform, whatever the marketing says. Just so that we're all clear, I mean, there are some other very large CDNs, but Akamai actually has more CDN traffic and more CDN customers than every other CDN combined. So we're not small. Again, old slide. The numbers are a little low, but you get the idea. It tells you something about where we are and how much we have and stuff like that. So this is kind of what Keith wanted me to explain to you guys. And this is a little marketing-y, so bear with me, but I wanted to use the slides because they have pretty animation, and I thought maybe it would get you guys to actually look at the screen. So what happens if an end user asks for a piece of content? The slide does nothing. Oh, end user types retailer.com. Browser sends it to the host. Host gets the HTML. Inside of the HTML, this is, by the way, just one of our products. I'm going to go through everything that we do. So the user asks for www.something.com, goes to the origin, goes to the actual company's web server. The web server replies with the HTML. Inside of the HTML has things like image source equals, and it has a fully qualified URL, you know, http://somethingakamai.net. And then those objects, what they like to call the heavy lifting, the, you know, GIFs, the JPEGs, the MPEGs, all come from an Akamai server right next to the end user. See how pretty the graphics are? Alternatively, you can just CNAME a website to Akamai. So instead of going all the way back to the company's computer, they just stay right there local. In fact, if it's on, if the servers are on your network, it never leaves your network, right? Blah, 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 lots of big objects. There you go. There are things that we can do dynamically. We have server-side scripts, which we call edge-side includes. It's actually an open standard that anybody can do. It was actually originally called ASI, Akamai-side includes, and then we said, let's open it up so the whole industry can do it, because we're just like that. So things like, for instance, the Akamai server knows where it is in the world, and we can do, this, by the way, is not like forming or whatever it was that we discussed at length. So don't get this mixed up. But like an Akamai server inside of London knows it's in London. And so if a retailer's in London and wants to put an ad, you know, save 20% if you go to the London store today, as opposed to the Los Angeles store or the Tokyo store, the server can actually do that dynamically. So there's lots of things you can do by having servers all over the world and having servers inside of networks and things like that. So, moving on. So without Akamai, here's where the marketing part comes in. Look how long it takes you to get to the website. Isn't this just horrible? Oh, wow, look at that. Somebody in marketing had way too much time on their hands. Many round trips to receive content. Change the slide, please. Okay, now I'm bored. Would you change the damn slide? Ah, fewer round trips with TCP optimization. Oh, wow, super Akamai. Unreliable connectivity. This is a great slide. Oh, look, the big red X. We all know how dangerous that is on the internet. Wouldn't want a big red X, would we? So, sure enough, with Akamai, and this is actually really cool technology. You guys have seen things that have happened over the past few months, actually. Cable cuts, all kinds of weird things, deep hearing events. Nobody knows anything about that. Well, it turns out, since we have Akamai servers in, you know, 1,000 networks in 72 countries and 1,800 POPs, if there is anything that's down, we can just use the Akamai network as an overlay network and tunnel through different Akamai servers to get back to where we need. So even if something's broken in the middle, we just go around it, and that's fine. It works great. We call that sure route. Again, marketing. I love marketing. Hello? I think your mouse is running out of battery. Okay. So with dynamic content, you need to send a lot of different things. Oh, I love these things. Akamai does things that, you know, any good network engineer would think of doing. We get the HTML. Before the browser actually asks for the object, we parse the HTML and realize that there's, you know, an object that we need to cache first, so we go and get it. If we're going to serve you an HTML page and it's got an image space source equals something in it, why wait until you ask before we go get that image? We're just going to pull that down, have it ready for the browser when it gets there. So some other things that we do. If you guys have any questions, by the way, I'm trying to run through this because I only got 5 minutes left, so I'm sorry if I'm going too fast. So basic technology, you send an HTTP request, we send the code, you get the code has embedded objects, comes to an Akamai server. That's basic. If you have a bunch of Akamai servers inside of your network, they act as one node. I thought I was going to ask a question. I was all happy for a minute. So, so if one object has, you know, the CNN home, if one web server has a CNN home page and the other one needs to serve it, they'll just share it on the what we call the back end. Every server has two Ethernet ports, one of which has 1918 addresses and doesn't connect to the internet. Just has, you know, little VLAN on the switch for itself. We use standard ICP intercache protocol stuff for that. It's pretty standard stuff. Moving on, or we can retrieve it directly from the origin site if nobody in the node has it. It's important to note, however, that every node is independent. So if you have three Akamai clusters inside of your network, each one of them is 100% independent. They don't talk to each other. They don't share content with each other. So if you have one object, say like, you know, a movie that's really popular, and all of your users download it, you're actually caching it in three different places on your network. So, downloading akamai.com. Wow, that's really small type there. Browser requests address for example.com. This is going to actually go through the individual steps of what Akamai actually does, and this is the important slide. So, browser types example.com in. He goes to his caching name server. Everybody knows what a caching name server is, right? Because if not, we got a Nominate guy here. No, I'm just kidding. Eh, whatever. So, it returns the IP address of an Akamai server near where you are. Browser requests. Okay, this isn't the important slide. Sorry, I guess the next slide is the important slide. So, finding the IP address. This is the important slide. You type browsers. That says browser's cache. It actually looked better on my screen when I did it. So the end user just asks for it, goes to the OS level. The OS goes to the local name server, which is the caching name server. caching name server goes out to the roots. You know, believe it or not, the marketing guys think the internic runs the internet. But you know, in this case, we're going to the .NET root, which kind of a which in parentheses is the internic. Don't ask me. I should have changed the slide, but you know, I was tired. They return an IP address. Then that goes out to example.com server. Don't ask me how it's going to example.com server when it went to the .NET root, but you know, we're going to leave that one alone for a minute. So the example.com server is actually going to return a CNAME for an Akamai hostname. Pretty standard stuff. You're going to go back to the, you know, TLDs, actually not the root servers. You're going to ask for Akamai.net. We're going to return an IP address to what we call Akamai's high-level DNS servers, sometimes called Akamai's top-level DNS servers, or if you know what you're talking about, our authorities. I have no idea why marketing doesn't just ask before they write these slides, but they just make names up and came out as high-level name servers. The thing is that what we end up doing then is we actually do a sub-delegation. So a host name in Akamai looks like a123.g.akamai.net. And the numbers and the letters are obviously interchangeable depending upon what customer it is, what time of day it is, whether I like you, and stuff like that. So the authorities do not actually return an IP address. They return a sub-delegation for g.akamai.net. And you have to ask what we call the low-level name servers for the actual IP address. So low-level name servers will be most of the time the server, the web servers inside of your network. So you're going to do a lot of DNS queries to Akamai web servers if you have servers inside of your network. So you're going to go to them. You're going to say, okay, I need a host name for the same. I need an IP address for the same host name. Well, we're going to return an IP address. So these three servers on the second row here, if you have servers inside of your network, that's going to be them. If you peer with us, it's going to be servers across an IX. It's going to be the exact same IP addresses as the ones that you're going to get the content from. And they're going to return frequently their own IP address, frequently not their own IP address. But it's going to be something inside of this group here. And you're going to get that IP address, and it's going to go back to the end user who's then going to actually get it. A couple of nice things about this. We have differing TTLs. Put this down for a minute. So obviously, you know, these kind of TTLs are a couple of days. These TTLs are a few hours. These TTLs, 20 seconds. We actually had to change it. It's a distribution of 20, 40, and 60 seconds because it turns out there's some older OSs, shockingly even something like SunOS, where if you return something sub 60 seconds and it's consistent, it actually breaks. But if you just sprinkle in an occasional 60-second TTL, it works. Nobody knows why. Actually, nobody knows why somebody is still using a resolver out there that's 15 years old, but that's the problem. So 20-second TTLs down here. Fortunately, these are servers that you're either pairing with or is on your network, so that's okay. Lots of queries to them don't matter. The other nice thing about this is that the end user, when he gets it, his browser isn't doing anything weird. There's no transparency proxying here. There's no caching. There's no WCCP. There's nothing like that. When they send that TCP packet out, if you've got a sniffer on the wire, it looks like just any other web request. It's a standard everyday HTTP GET. The IP address in the header is the IP address you're going to. There's nothing funny going on here. So that's really nice. The only weird thing is that if you say host space host name and you say host space host name, you get back two different IP addresses. But if you're actually sniffing the wire, everything looks perfectly normal. The only weirdness is inside of an Akamai node, we have, you can call it a HSRP-like or VRP-like mechanism where if server number one goes down, server number two picks up his IP address and answers for it. But that's inside of our node, and you don't care about that. On the wire, everything looks normal, and that's a good thing. Everybody get all that? It's a lot of information for this early in the morning when a fire alarm went off. So this is the slide where I get to talk about the Akamai Accelerated Network Program, Network Partner. And we call it the AANP. This is where you get servers for free. It's real simple. How much time? I'm 3 minutes over, so I'm going to do this in 60 seconds. I already answered most of these questions. Essentially, shockingly, you're going to get the most popular web content, whatever. So generally, we're going to give you servers for free. You're going to give us rack space for free, and life is good for both of us. It reduces your bandwidth cost both off of transit and even off of your backbone, because, you know, even if you peer with us, you still got to backhaul it from the IX, right? We're going to get rid of that for you. Here's some performance graphs. These are actual graphs. Of course, we picked ones that looked really bad, but they're still actual graphs. So the inbound to outbound is usually about 1:9. People think that we have like a 1,000-to-1 ratio. We don't, because a lot of content is no store or, you know, dynamic, so it just goes through. So it's between 1:7 and 1:10, depending upon how big and what your content is and what your users are like. But it's still, remember, every piece of content that we pull in to cache, you would be pulling in anyway. You'd just be pulling it in 1,000 times instead of 1 time. Or in this case, 9 times. So we take care of everything. We ship you a bunch of servers. We ask you to rack and stack them, but if you really want us to, we'll send out a contractor to rack and stack them. Once a rack and stacked, you have to give us some rack space, some IP addresses, 2 per server in our case, and some power. And that's really it. Yeah, some power. So was anybody here on the global peering forum? Yeah, a few of you went on the cruise ship, no? So every year we have this thing called the Global Peering Forum, and a couple of years it was actually held on a cruise ship. And people were making fun of Akamai because, you know, it's like, well, you guys use so much power. And I'm like, yeah, Al Gore knows me personally, right? He comes after my ass. No, the truth of the matter is when we were on the cruise ship has 2 engines, and they're on what's called azipods, which is generally just an electrical engine that can swivel underneath the cruise ship. Each one of the 2 engines underneath that one medium-sized cruise ship used more power than every Akamai server combined. We don't actually use that much power. I mean, we use a lot of power when you're talking to Telehouse because those guys run their entire data center off of one of these plug bars sticking out of the wall. But in reality, we don't actually use that much power. We spend a lot of money. I mean, millions and millions of dollars. That's got to be at least 20 pounds worth of R&D every year trying to figure out how to use less power. So we don't actually use that much power. So that's it. Sorry I ran 5 minutes over, but does anybody have any more questions? Was anybody actually listening to this? Because, you know, I spent more than 5 minutes putting these slides together. I did the first presentation, marketing did the second. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Andy Davidson from LoneApp. A question about your finding the right IP address slide. Do you work out where the localization is, where the user is at the authoritative name server level or the one below that, the one where it's in the cluster? And what do you use that? Do you use Anycast or?
No, we work out by the authoritative name server, the high level, top level, whatever.
That thing does the working out where the user is. Okay.
Well, actually, what we do, I think I mentioned before, we map the internet every 12 hours. So Akamai knows where every IP address is, both geographically and topologically. Topology is obviously more important. So we have this preloaded so that when we get a request in, and by the way, this is... guys need to pay attention here because this is actually kind of important for if you're actually thinking about doing something with Akamai. Going back to the slide, I hope that I can get back there in less than 45 seconds in this laptop. When we get a request from the caching name server, we use the source IP address of the caching name server because when we return, so when this guy goes there and he comes back and he goes to us, right now we are figuring out which Akamai cluster to send you to. Because the subdelegation is really just picking which server in the cluster has that content on its hard drive, which one has enough CPU and the Ethernet's not full and stuff like that, right? But at this point, we're figuring out where you are. These guys don't know what the IP address of the end user is. They've never seen the end user. And even if they could somehow magically figure out which end user asked, the next guy will just get the same answer because this guy's caching it. So we're doing this mapping on this guy's, the caching name servers, the recursive name server. Some people call it the resolver. It's not actually the resolver, right? The resolver's on your machine. But some people actually, this is the important box. So that means that if you have a bunch of users in Scotland and they're using a name server in New York, guess which Akamai server they're going to go to. They're going to go to New York. That's important. So these guys have a pre-calculated, just 1 second, I'll be almost done, sorry. This is an important point. These guys have a pre-calculated set so that when you get a set of IP addresses in, when you get a request in, they're going to return a pre-calculated cluster. They're not calculating it on the fly. Now, we map the internet every 12 hours so we know where everything is on the internet, and then we take performance data. If a link goes down, that's updated within 10 to 60 seconds. But we can't find new links that quickly because that requires a new map. So we have a roadmap of the internet that's updated every 12 hours, and then we get traffic data every 10 seconds. Sometimes it actually takes up to 60 because, you know, if there's packet loss, we don't just, like if you lose one packet, you don't just instantly assume a road is down. Shit happens sometimes. So does everybody understand how that works? And that hopefully answered your question. But there's still an important point here that the caching name server is the basis of our mapping.
Okay, follow-up question.
Who are you?
James Blessing from Internet.
Nice to meet you, James.
What about OpenDNS?
So there's a guy named David from OpenDNS, and he and I are working on fixing this. But right now, if you use OpenDNS, you're going to get a bad Akamai server. You might as well just go to something that's not Akamized, because you're going to get a... I was going to say random, but honestly, I manually picked a bunch of places where you're going to go. That's actually what happened. So we're working on things with David because OpenDNS is this. And the nice thing about this is that since he's runs his own software, when the user one comes here, if he tells us somehow messages us the IP address of the end user as well as the host name he's asking for in the packet, then we can map to that end user. And when the second end user comes, he's not a normal caching name server. He can do things like not send back the same answer. So we're working on doing something like that. But right now, yeah, you just go to a place that I picked.
Hi, Colin May from Coblen Wireless. What are the different options regarding the refresh time from origin to the caching store within the network?
So there's several ways to do that. And I'm not going to go back to the slide. You guys know how it looks. So the first one is the most common, which is obviously TTL. Also, we have what we call the big red button. I call it the big red button. We have a portal like every other business on the internet, and if our customer says, oh my God, this piece of content, which I put a four or five year TTL on, needs to be, you know, killed, they can say, invalidate this object in every cache around the world. That's the big red button. We have other ways of doing things. If you're really worried, there's also zero TTL, no store or pass through. So either zero TTL, which is check every single time, or pass through, which is don't even store it, just, you know, get it from us and send it through. And we have ways of actually even making that better because we have persistent TCP connections to the origin and things like that. So there's that. Also, if the entire site, if you don't CNAME the site to us and you just have the HTML built from your page, then you can just change, we have what's called a serial number inside of the URL, which is, you know, really long and has lots of things in it, and /blah/foo/bar, and bar is a serial number. You just change the serial number, it's a different object. It's no longer, you know, there's no TTL necessary because you've actually changed the actual object we're caching. So there's many ways to do this. And Akamai, you know, gives our customers all this. The idea is that it's got to be at least as easy or at least as reliable as running your own web server. And so if we have lots of financial institutions, lots of, you know, newspapers, sports companies, things like that on our system, it obviously works pretty well. Oh, another question. I hope I'm not bothering the next person who's up, but I just want to answer all the questions.
I'll try and be quick. John Lyons from Thus. You mentioned that in order to justify providing an ISP with Akamai servers internally, you're talking about 25 megabits a second for HTTP. For non-HTTP, what's the criteria?
That's not so simple. You need to come talk to me about that because the problem is even if you have 100 megabits, we have, as a for instance, on our Windows Media Streaming servers, we have thousands of internet radio stations, and you could pull 100 megabits worth of radio and not have a single duplicate stream. And that would not be good for you, and it wouldn't be good for us. So we need to actually do some looking at what you're doing.
Okay, thank you.
By the way, I think I said it before, my email address is patrick@akamai.com, and if the wireless is working again, you can send me that, or you can talk to me afterwards. So if I haven't answered anything, let me know.
Okay, Patrick, Remco van Mook from Equinix. You're holding up my presentation, so I'll keep my question short. instead of making a map of the internet, you've obviously also looked at the amount of local name servers that you encounter. Is it still worthwhile to figure out where all of the local name servers, or at least the important ones, are, and preset something based on that instead of recalculating the entire internet?
We obviously have looked at that, and we've decided it's easier to recalculate the whole internet. The problem is that since we're getting traffic data over the 12 hours, it turns out that so much stuff happens over that 12 hours that it's easier just to refresh. Now, just to be clear, it's kind of one step forward, or two steps forward, one step back, because the recalculation takes time and the traffic data is real time. So every 12 hours, we get more and more traffic data. And then we've done the recalculation, which actually takes like 2.5-3 hours. So we end up with a map that's fresher, but traffic data that might be slightly older, because you have to go back a little bit. You can't apply, the last 10 seconds worth of traffic data to the new one. So so the answer to that question is actually really long, and I'm holding up your presentation, is actually what it comes down to. We do actually not map every last corner of the internet, is another minor point that might be interesting to people. So there are some places that have, like an entire AS that has less than a megabit of Akamai traffic, will not get the actual roadmap. We'll just view them as a single dot on the map. And there are some places that it's just so hard to map because they're through satellite links or something like that, that we actually use their geographic location to map them as opposed to topologically. But 98-99% of the internet is mapped every 12 hours, and real-time traffic data is applied to that map very, very frequently. And we have found that that's the best. And we're on our third version of our mapping system, so we really think this is the best way to do it.
Okay, thanks.
That one's turned off.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much, Patrick. Appreciate you.